times tomorrow. I'm Rod Hill.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly
15
seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Would you believe that America right now is blowing $3 billion a year on food stamps for illegal aliens? The number just out from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they monitor a program that is technically called Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as SNAP, otherwise known in common parlance as food stamps. And right now, the United States is allowing somewhere between 1.5 and 1.9 million illegal aliens to get food stamps from the federal government at a taxpayer cost of about $3 billion. And if the first reaction you have to that is, but Lars, doesn't the law make it illegal for illegal aliens to get food stamps? And the answer to that is yes. And has the Biden regime found a way to get around that law passed by the people's representatives? Yes, they have, because the Biden administration is great at giving away America. I'll get into the details on that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on what we like to call Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And if you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. If you're inclined to be a naysayer, if you disagree with what I've had to say or the opinions I've voiced, we're going to put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You can send emails. That's easy too. talk@LarsLarson.com. And our X poll today. For the Radio Northwest Network, consider this. Should transit buses and trains, I almost said brains, get priority over other traffic the way that police and fire trucks do? They're actually doing it. In one Northwest transit agency, TriMet, they have literally used the same kind of system that gives police and fire priority over red lights at intersections. And what does that mean? It means that regular tax-paying traffic, the kind of cars and trucks driven by the people who actually work and pay the taxes to support TriMet, they get stopped at the red light. The buses will get a chance to go on through. Should transit buses and trains get priority over other traffic? My answer is no. You can answer it any way you like. At Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on our website at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, let me tell you what the details are on this SNAP fiasco. SNAP is the formal name of food stamps. Now, everybody calls them food stamps except the federal government. I think they decided that calling them food stamps was somehow embarrassing to the people who are getting the money. And in fact, it's only not money, but the food stamp benefits, usually delivered on one of those EBT cards. You can walk into a grocery store and buy almost any kind of food. But there are a lot of things that you're not allowed to buy on SNAP. And the amount of fraud and misuse that goes on in food stamps. And if you wonder, because I've never taken food stamps, and I would guess that most of you never have either. But if somebody has hundreds of dollars in food stamps, whether they got them legally or not, and they want to transform that into cash money that you can use to buy beer, cigarettes, heroin, fentanyl, lottery tickets, whatever you want to spend it on, there are ways to do that as well. Not legally, of course, but it gets done anyway. But check this out. A spokesperson for the USDA gives the official government response. Only U.S. citizens and certain lawfully present non-citizens may receive SNAP benefits. That is the letter of the law. But consider this. He says SNAP is not and has never been available to undocumented non-citizens. However, there is a big fat however in there. And it is especially significant because if you think the bill is big now at just under 2 million non-citizens getting food stamps, it's going to get a whole lot bigger. over the last 3 years, at least 10 million illegal aliens have come in under Joe Biden. The number could be 12. It could be 15 million. Even the federal government doesn't know. I mean, heck, they lost track of about 32,000 children who came across the border in the last 3 years. They don't know where they are, which probably means they're in the hands of people who are trafficking them for prostitution, for pornography, for abuse, for anything else. And the Biden administration, which was always critical of Donald Trump, saying why they separated those kids out in cages. Well, the cages were actually built by Obama and Biden back in the day. And they weren't cages. They were just simply a way of holding those kids separate from the adults. You don't want to put kids in an adult detention center. And if you're Kamala Harris, you don't want the detention center at all. She has promised on day one that she will shut down all the illegal alien detention centers. And if you say, well, then where are those illegals going to go? They're going to go anywhere they want to go in the United States of America. That is Kamala Harris's plan as the former border czar of the United States. But here's the catch that allows illegal aliens to get food stamps. Non-citizens are eligible, include refugees, individuals granted asylum, victims of severe trafficking, people who've had their deportation withheld, Cubans, Haitians, Amerasians, Iraqi and Afghan special immigrants, green card holders, battered non-citizens. There's a game being played, folks, right now in America, where all you have to do if you're an illegal alien is say, I'm the victim of a crime. And all of a sudden, magically, you're transformed from illegal alien to somebody with special status. And then these are the key ones. Conditional entrance and those granted parole for a period of at least 1 year are eligible for SNAP. So what has Joe Biden been doing to try to bring down the numbers of illegal aliens crossing into America? He's not actually holding anybody back at the border, but what he's doing is he's saying, I'm going to grant all these people special parole. And by simply changing the name that the federal government uses to describe these people, their status changes. They're allowed to stay in the United States. In many cases, they're allowed to work. And now, literally millions of them are collecting the kind of benefits that are supposed to be there by law only for American citizens. In 2022, there were 1.5 million non-citizens on SNAP. The cost was $2.95 billion. That's the most recent year for which they have numbers, is 2 years ago. Now, what would you guess as more than 10 million illegals have flooded into America in the last couple of years? We're going to be paying billions and billions of dollars. It's not bad enough, apparently, that when an illegal alien comes to the Border Patrol does not stop them. Joe Biden says process them into America just as fast as you possibly can. Give them a plane ticket. Give them a bus ticket. And when they get where they're going, give them a hotel room. Give them a cash debit card so they'll have some money in their pockets, because Joe Biden plans to win the election this November using illegal aliens. So let me give you one piece of good news on that. In the last 20 minutes, the United States Supreme Court has partially reinstated an Arizona law that says Arizona, because it's one of the few states that says we want to see if you're a citizen before we let you vote. The federal government under Joe Biden tried to block that. The Supreme Court has now slapped the Biden administration upside the head and said, no, you don't. Glad to be with you. Always glad to take your calls. 866-HEY-LARS. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, it's...
Ronald Reagan knew better. Do you?
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
So let's talk about the carefully crafted fake by the name of Tim Walz. Now, I know the Democrats want you to think of the VP nominee as Coach. It's a warm, fuzzy kind of name and all that. He did mention last night that he was a coach of a football team, only don't mention that he literally could not be the coach of the football team because of his criminal record. He had to be instead an assistant coach volunteer. I'm pretty sure they won't mention the A rating that Tim Walz once held from the NRA because he's given that up, nor his support for the Keystone XL pipeline, the one that got canceled on day one of Joe Biden's reign of terror. All of that changed when Tim Walz ran for governor. He went from being a relatively conservative Democrat to being a full-blown hard-left liberal, voting for illegal aliens, against the cops, and for abortion. Minnesota, run completely incompetently under Governor Walz, lost literally hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars in some of the worst pandemic frauds in America. Now, that's bad management. So, when George Floyd riots erupted in his state, Governor Tim Walz delayed deploying the National Guard to Minneapolis for days. As for his National Guard service, Walz did do that, 24 years of service in uniform, until they got ready to deploy him, and then he quickly resigned. And now he has lied about being a combat veteran, he's lied about carrying a gun in battle, he's lied about the rank that he retired at, and he's done it not just once or twice, but for years. He's also lied lately about using in vitro fertilization for he and his wife to have two kids. Provably untrue. He did not use IVF, but if the Democrats need a campaign issue, he's willing apparently to lie all it takes. And never forget that he demanded that all state workers in Minnesota have an updated vaccine card and that they get tested for COVID twice a week. Take the jab or you lose that job. That was the order from Tim Walz. I hope Americans learn a lot more about Tim Walz before they cast their votes. Now, our question of the day, Pete wrote in, and I get this question from time to time. Hey, Lars, what do you think are the odds of the Oregon legislature getting rid of the income tax and implementing a sales tax in its place? Seems like this would be a good system in the sense that everybody pays into the system, even the homeless people who did get all kinds of free services and whatnot. Signed, Pete. Well, I wrote back to Pete, and I thought I'd share it with you. Pete, it's not likely at all for two reasons. Number one, a sales tax has been voted on by Oregonians 9 times. It failed every single time the voters said no. But the second reason, you know how Oregon got its income tax, the one that's too high right now? The state had a property tax and then promised citizens, hey, by the way, we know your property taxes are too high. Give us an income tax and we'll cut your property taxes. They fell for the scam. And then what happened? Well, property taxes went up, so did income taxes. So giving the government another way to reach into your pocket would be an exceptionally bad idea. Also, sales taxes are notoriously the most expensive way to collect taxes. With an income tax, all you have to track is 24 financial transactions a year. For the average worker, 2 paychecks a month times 12 months, 24 transactions. With a sales tax, you have to track hundreds or even thousands of transactions every year for every single citizen. And then you have this question. Do you tax everything? Do you include food? Do you include medicine, gasoline, rent? And there's plenty of cheating that goes on. And would Salem give up the income tax revenue that is the majority of state income in exchange for a sales tax? If it's on everything you buy or sell, which is not likely, then it would be low. If it's only on certain things, then it would be high. So, if you don't tax food, you don't tax rent, you don't tax mortgage, you don't tax medicine, you don't tax gasoline, you're taxing most of the money that people spend. So try this math. Right now, the government in Oregon taxes almost 9% of every dime you make. It's not quite 9, but it's close. What would the sales tax have to be to replace that if they only tax a small portion of what you make, since most of the things you spend that paycheck on would not be taxed at all? Now, if you see a hole in those arguments, share it with me. Now, today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I had an unnamed concerned citizen who wrote in for today's Daily Grill and said, Lars, please look into the Beaverton School District's bias incident reporting system. It's on their website, open to any member of the community under the Report a Concern tab. Anybody can submit a report of any speech or behavior that they deem hateful. Once the report is initiated, an investigation begins by the Office of Equity and Inclusion, which then determines if discipline is necessary. My question is, who determines what's hateful? That's Marxism, communism at its core. If we keep on going down this road, we're going to have situations similar to what's happened in Canada and the UK, where people start arresting folks for their social media posts, signed a concerned citizen. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. James writes in, Lars, this morning on the TV news, it's actually my old TV station, Fox 12. There was a story about TriMet getting new buses. They said they were powered by 100% renewable energy. Is that possible without running special wires from the windmills to the bus barn or from the hydro plant? If they power with solar, how do they charge at night? And have they put renewable energy power plants at TriMet? If they're getting power off the grid, aren't they getting a mix of all power and paying more for power under the guise of it being renewable? I remember years ago, PGE offered a renewable power option on my power bill, my home bill. And when somebody investigated, they found it was the same old grid. You're just paying more, signed James. You got the picture, all right. And when they talk about those buses, take this into account. TriMet's new buses, electric, cost twice as much to run. And if you say, but they run on electricity, it comes out of the wall. No, it doesn't. It costs money. And what's the average savings? Well, the average savings would actually pay for the different cost of the bus in about 50 years. That's if the bus lasted for 50 years. Do you know what the industry average is and the TriMet average is? The average diesel bus that is clean burning diesel, it lasts about 16 years. Do you know how what their average lifetime is for electric buses? That would be about 12 years. So that means the bus, if it could run for 50 years, might break even with the cost of an electric versus a diesel. Because it's only going to run for a quarter of that, it's a money loser all day long. Let's go to Chris. Chris, we got less than a minute. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, love your show, Conspiracy Theory Thursday. You know that poke in the White House, they couldn't figure out whose it was?
Yeah.
I don't think it was Hunter's. I think it was Kamala's. And there's no proof that it wasn't. So who's to know that it wasn't Kamala's coke, and who's to know she doesn't do drugs and alcohol?
You know what, Chris? I think you're right. I mean, there are at least a few people who've watched her speaking in public, and there are times she looks like she's had one vodka too many. But you may be right. Maybe it's cocaine. Maybe that's where that weird cackly laugh comes from. The one that her husband says, oh, I love that laugh. Yeah, the guy who had sex with the nanny. That guy. But no, Kamala Harris. Well, they did find the cocaine hidden in a place that's not too far from where the vice president's vehicle is parked under the White House. Chris, you might be absolutely right. It's a great conspiracy theory Thursday.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's Elon Musk sums up America's government.
And what I see all over the place is people who care about looking good while doing evil.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. So here's one for you. If solar electric power is the future of America, I don't think it is. It may be a piece of it, but it's not the majority part. Why are folks near the Northwest's next major solar project objecting? And frankly, I'll tell Dave Rogers right up front, I don't know Dave. I don't have any connection to the product. I don't have a project. I don't have a dog in the fight. But I think your arguments are good, that you're concerned about what is known as the Muddy Creek Energy Park. Dave Rogers, welcome to the program. You're the spokesperson for a group called Friends of the Gap Road. Would you mind describing what the people who want to build this giant solar farm are up to and why you object to it?
Yes, sir. Thanks a lot for having me on. This Muddy Creek solar project is a project that should never have even gotten started. We have LCDC, which is Land Conservation and Development Commission, that normally you would just figure your farmland was protected. But in this case, few years ago, there was a law passed that exempted some of these large solar projects. So we now have slated to go in a 1,588-acre, that's three square miles,
yep,
of solar project. In addition to that, they are going to be putting in 199-volt
solar panels.
The solar panels, but in addition to that, the giant batteries, so that they, when the sun's not shining, they can still make some electricity go through. Okay. The local community initially thinks they're going to get the advantage of this, but this is going straight into the power grid and probably straight to California.
And by the way, Dave, this is a private company that is pushing this, but are they getting a gigantic chunk of federal money and maybe even state money too?
They're getting both. This is actually a South Korean corporation by the name of Hanwha Qcell. They're a giant corporation nationwide. They put their panels together in Georgia, but they still get all of the credits and breaks here in Oregon. Not just Oregon's breaks, but the federal breaks. My understanding also is that they were just lent $1.5 million as money to go into testing these projects, which is the other part of our big objection to this, and that is that it is a big experimental project, too big certainly to start something new. And these lithium ion batteries, the idea of having these in these fields is just insane.
Well, because Dave, if I can jump ahead, when those things catch fire or malfunction, they are notorious for causing massive fires. A Tesla fire can take tens of thousands of gallons to put it out. These are, I imagine, much bigger than Tesla batteries.
Gigantic. These are a good deal bigger, and I don't think they even know how they're going to put these out. It's like having a truckload of dynamite in your backyard.
Now, tell me this, Dave. I want you to get to these. This is near Medford, correct?
No.
Oh.
No, actually, this is south of Brownsville, Oregon.
Okay.
Between Brownsville and Eugene.
And Eugene, on the
very,
north side.
Very near Harrisburg.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's on the east side of I-5. And this 1,588 acres is going to stretch out for over 4 miles. So it's not just a large piece of farmland. In addition to that, the same area is all wetland. It's used by hundreds of thousands of migrating waterfowl each year, both going north and going south. And this is just going to destroy it. The other contention is always that it can always be put back in the farm ground. And that just isn't the case. That's a fallacy.
Why not?
The soils in this area are all what they call hydric soils. This is all a wetland area. They're hydric soils. The actual soil on the surface is only 4 to 5 inches deep. Below that is a solid blue clay. Once they start constructing an operation like this,
you're
and putting in the piling,
that clay barrier,
absolutely,
aren't you? And the water's going to leak out.
Well, you're going to mix the clay with the good soil. The only reason this is good ground, and it's considered high value farm ground, by the way, and the only reason that it is good farm ground is because that topsoil is on the top. And the second that you start bringing that clay up and mixing it with it, you're destroying its structure.
By the way, Dave, I want people to be able to, because I know this is more than we can talk about in one day, and we plan to talk to you in the future.
Sure.
Friends of Gap Road, where can they find it on social media? And then I've got a few more questions.
Well, to begin with, you can find it at friendsofgaproad.com. We have a website, and on that website, we also have a great drone footage that is narrated by my granddaughter Melissa, and promoted also on there by Sam Elliott. And by the way, Sam Elliott has a ranch right here on Gap Road.
I'd heard
very
that.
Near where this project's going in. Yeah,
It's, yeah, the big Hollywood actor. Hey, Dave, let me ask you this, though. There are going to be people saying, well, okay, you've got an environmental project, allegedly, to save the planet. That's what they'd have you believe about solar power. And they've been given permission by the Oregon legislature and the governor to violate the environmental laws to save the environment. Is that what it sums up to?
That's exactly right. It really is contrary, isn't it?
Yeah.
LCDC basically left it up to the counties to decide when there could be exemptions, and then they had to be okayed through LCDC. A few years ago, they passed an extension to the LCDC rules that said if you will put in an energy site that is larger than 160 acres of high value farmland, you bypass the county and you go straight to the Oregon Siting Council. That's the Oregon FSAC. Energy Siting Council.
Yep,
exactly. And this council, by the way, is appointed, and most of the appointees were appointed by Governor Brown.
So, by the way, Dave, I mean, this has always troubled me, but you sure. Tell people we have to save farms in Oregon. We have to save farmland. You tell a farmer you can't even build a second house on your property so your son or your daughter or son-in-law and daughter-in-law can live there and help you farm. But then they turn around and say, but if you want to put up, you know, 3 square miles of solar panels on farmland and wreck the farmland, that's perfectly okay. So, in other words, yeah. The citizens, the rights of average citizen landowners mean nothing, and the rights of farmers mean nothing, but solar power is the god that Tina Kotek and everybody else in Salem bows down to?
Yep, it is, and it's this is, again, promoted. There's a lot of money in this. These tax credits that they're given for putting these in are huge. And the tax credits are saleable. These companies don't care about solar. They don't care about really even putting in the panels. It's just a way to get a tax credit, a saleable tax credit.
Dave, one last quick question. Now, do you know how much this whole project, or what are they saying it's going to cost? Do you know?
I don't.
Okay. All I'm suggesting is if I guessed tens of millions, I think I'd be safe in saying tens of millions.
You'd be low with tens of millions.
I think I would. It might be hundreds. Does the county get full property taxes on the value of that investment on that piece of land?
They get some property taxes on it, but there are also a lot of exemptions on that as well.
So everybody who builds a house is going to pay 100% of the improvement of that land, but the people who put in the solar panels pay a fraction of that. The group is called Friends of Gap Road. It's an area south of Brownsville, north of Eugene. It's a massive solar project, and it violates environmental laws. And Tina Kotek says that's okay. You got the Lars Larson. With Home Safe.
Be told, Lars has welcomed naysayers for 27 years, but occasionally...
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and consider this. The story out of Seattle. An 80-year-old woman who is a dog walker. She's beloved by her clients. 80 years old, killed in broad daylight. She was carjacked. And what's especially significant, I mean, I'm going to tell you that Ruth Dalton, 80 years old, was loved by the people who knew her, the people she walked dogs for. The man who killed her, though, Jamed Haynes, 48, 8-time convicted felon. And I think the first question, this never occurs to people like Bob Ferguson, which is why he should never be governor of Washington State, but he's the attorney general. The first question, when you hear that an 8-time convicted felon has taken somebody's life, has assaulted them, has committed a serious crime, is why in the world is a person with 8 felony convictions walking around loose? Why isn't he sitting behind bars? I mean, how many bites of the apple do you get? You commit a felony, you're convicted. You commit another one, you're convicted. At what point do you say this guy has committed enough crimes that we need to lock him up and incapacitate him for a good long time, either to dissuade him from this kind of stuff, or to just simply incapacitate him so he can't do it. So what happens? Broad daylight, Tuesday of this week, an 80-year-old woman, a dog walker, as we said, she's going to her car. This guy climbs into the passenger side of her SUV, tries to push her out the driver's door. Two dogs were inside the vehicle. He shuts the door, begins to drive down the road. He veers off the road, striking a planter and a patch of grass, drags the woman. And a passerby tried to stop him, to no avail. This woman was backed over by her own car, by the thief who stole it, and he killed her. He allegedly killed her. He has a right to his day in court. I'm wondering how that's going to go with witnesses, people who saw it happen. The testimony is going to be right there. And I have no doubt that the system in Washington State will probably try everything it can to cut him loose. Eight times convicted of felonies, running around loose, is accused of killing an 80-year-old woman. And you watch. He will not get locked up in prison for the rest of his life, even though he should be. Let's go to Gary. Hey, Gary, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Before I do what the gentleman that screamed me, I'll comment on what you just mentioned. In our community here in Daytona Beach in Volusia County, we have the same issue as what you were just talking about. And I'm a thorn in their side because I look at some of the stats, and I will let the people in our community running our community know. We have a sentencing problem. We don't have a crime problem. If the sentencing was done correctly, our crime would be down probably 45 or 50%, especially Agreed. Violent crime and gun crime. And, of course, that sticks in their craw. They hate that when you bring that up. It's the sentencing. If you deduct the people from those courtrooms that should be in prison, wow, they just have some empty courtrooms. And the other thing is they hate to acknowledge, and I've been after them, about if someone's here illegally, they'll put unknown status. And I said, that doesn't fly. You have to let the community know whether the person with the fentanyl and the gun is here illegally. We have the right to know. And
I agree. Hey, Gary, it's a problem at every step of the process. And I'm not saying you're wrong. You're absolutely right. But consider this. You know, since our current Democrat candidate for president, Kamala Harris, she loves Venn diagrams. About the only thing I don't know that she knows what they are. I know what they are. But think about this Venn diagram. You got 350 million people in America. A tiny fraction of that group is violent criminals. So that's one circle within the big circle. Then you've got the ones that actually get caught doing what they're doing. That's an even smaller circle. Then of the ones that are caught and arrested, you have another group that are actually where charges are brought. That's an even smaller circle. And then when charges are brought, you have an even smaller circle where the prosecutor takes it to a grand jury, gets an indictment, and goes to trial. An even smaller circle. And then you have the number at trial who actually are found guilty. That's an even smaller number within the number within the number. And then you sentence them. But it doesn't stop there. Because, Gary, you've got parole boards, probation. You know, if you violate probation and the judge says, oh, you violated probation, you know, slaps your hand and lets you go. No. So at every level of that system, and it also includes governors, maybe not in Florida, but in other parts of the country, governors will say, oh, this guy was, all he did was take a car. You know, that's how they'll look at it. Right. And you say, why should he serve the rest of his life? And they cut them loose. So you have a problem at every level.
Yep, the counties, we have a county 100 miles from here that is totally different than our county. We're fairly conservative, but there's a county, Lakeland County, over in Polk County, that it's a totally different justice system. I mean, criminals that commit crimes are expedited through that system pretty quickly, and their sheriff, Grady Judd.
You're going to have to say the second comment quick because we're coming up to the break, Gary.
You bet. Our Commerce Secretary, if people wonder if we have an inept Biden-Harris administration not to know that the revised numbers down were not from Donald Trump.
And you're absolutely right. Gina Raimondo on CNN actually said, I'm not familiar with those revised numbers. It was reported by the Bureau of Labor, which the Commerce Secretary doesn't know anything about.
The Lars Larson.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
You all ready?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday and the Radio Northwest Network. And of course, your phone calls and your emails are always welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the front of the line. We love it when naysayers call at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Is it time that somebody got a pink slip because of the quiet release of perverts from McNeil Island into communities around the state of Washington without any warning to the public at all? Now, I've got my opinion on that. You heard a lot about it yesterday, but I wanted to get the opinion of Maya Espinoza, who's running for District 28, Washington State Senate. Ms. Espinoza, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Lars. It's good to talk to you again.
Oh, it's good to talk to you again as well. Does anybody in government get a pink slip after they've done something as colossally stupid as this?
Not in the Democrat-controlled Washington state government, apparently not.
I mean, Gilma Menzies, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, a Department of Social and Health Services, the technical term, DSHS, they have released hundreds of unsupervised sexually violent criminals into towns all over the state of Washington. Seattle Times, usually I degrade the fish wrapper, but in this case, they documented all of this, and you would think you're calling for the firing of the secretary, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's a start. This has been ongoing for a long time, years. In fact, this has been happening under our noses. And so I agree with you, Lars. The Seattle Times deserves a lot of credit for documenting this, for collecting their own data to be able to deliver this. Because, you know, the scary part, the state doesn't have it. The state is not tracking any of this. They're releasing criminals, sexually violent repeat offender criminals, into everyday neighborhoods with kids, with school. And what did the Seattle Times find? Oh, shockingly, the crimes continued, but the state has no record of it, and they have no oversight, and they don't care to. It certainly makes the responsibility easy when you don't have to have any responsibility at all.
Now, I got to tell you something, Maya. I live all the way at the southern end of Washington State, but I'm sure they're releasing some of these perverts to Clark County as well. But there's a special reason that you have a particular concern about this, because the woman you're running against, Nobles, is one of the people who voted for the law to allow the unsupervised release of these perverts, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Senator Nobles is a far left extremist in a very purple district. This is a district that includes McNeil Island, but it also includes JBLM. It includes Lakewood, Steilacoom, DuPont, University Place, a very, very beautiful part of the district. But you know what else is in Lakewood? Western State Hospital. We have a disproportionate number of these sexually violent predators being released into our communities. And so I'm absolutely calling on Senator Nobles to join me in calling for the resignation of this head of DSHS. For starters, to redeem herself for that vote that she took that made it easier to do this, all the warm and fuzzies when we release people and say, I'm sure they'll be fine. That's not what's happening. We need to do something about it. But unfortunately, this is very on brand for Senator Nobles. She's the defund the police type, voted for that police pursuit ban twice, even when it came back around and most of the Democrats said, we've always been pro-police. Not her. She doesn't care to pretend.
I'm going to ask my executive producer, Donovan, to reach out to Senator Nobles and ask her to come on, because I'll give her a fair shot. to explain her position. But when she cast that vote, I mean, this isn't like voting for, you know, some routine little project like a water district. This was casting a vote in favor of a law 3 years ago that said these high-risk sex offenders could be released unsupervised into what they call residential settings. Well, that's putting them right in people's neighborhoods. So in that case, did she offer any kind of rationale? And let me guess, was it financial was one, and maybe social justice was another? But what explanation would she have for saying, I want to cut perverts loose into people's communities, it'll all work out fine?
Yeah, again, when we're not tracking the data of what happens, it's easy to say they've been rehabilitated according to their therapist, they're ready to be released, and they deserve a second shot. This is not a second shot for these folks that get convicted to the special detention center. They have, exceeded Western state standards. They have been deemed so dangerous to society that they've been confined to an island, and for social justice, I'm sure it's always money related, or frankly, laziness and convenience, that we would just solve all of our McNeil Island problems, make it easier to shut it all down by slowly releasing people back out into the community. We're the ones that have to deal with it. And this is at the same time that we're reducing police force and crippling police from doing their jobs. This is extremely irresponsible of Senator Nobles, but again, unfortunately, not out of character.
I'm talking to Maya Espinoza. She's seeking the Senate district seat in District 28. So I guess what I wonder is whenever I hear these financial arguments, what's the current all funds budget, 2 year budget for Washington State? Isn't it about $80 or $90 billion?
Billion. Can you believe that? And we have surplus year after year. And then we find ways to, leave it up to the taxpayers by putting the onus on them. We can be doing a lot with that money. And everyone knows that we can be doing more in the mental health arena. We can provide, you know, make it easier for therapists to get licensed, do the things that would allow us to create better and new detention centers.
Okay,
those are all solutions.
All I'm saying is, Maya, when you've got an $80 or $90 billion budget every 2 years, so half of that every year, and you say, but we're going to save money, not counting the cost of the danger to the community, not counting the cost of just frightening the daylights out of the community by cutting these freaks loose into the community. I don't know how you put a dollar figure on that, but if you were to put a dollar figure on the savings by releasing hundreds of these people, it wouldn't come up to a fraction of that $80 billion. And it would be like somebody makes $100,000 a year and you say, did you put in a $300 security system in your house?
Yeah.
Oh, no. You'd say, it's too expensive. You say, you've got all this money and you've decided the one place you want to cut expenses is not cutting loose the entire diversity, equity and inclusion department or cutting loose all the claptrap they've got in Olympia. No, you want to release sexual perverts into the community as your cost saving measure. That just seems insane.
Well, and it's not much of a cost savings when there was a recent lawsuit that was settled for $100 million to a family whose two children died at the hands of their father. Again, because of DSHS negligence. This is an unfortunate series of events and series of failures by the department. And that is why I'm calling on Senator Noble to join me in demanding the resignation of this individual. But that is just the start to the problems we have in this state. And of course, that's part of the reason I decided to step up again and run for office. Lars, your audience may remember me from running statewide for superintendent.
Yep.
When I stood up against creepy Chris Reichdahl and his K-12, quote unquote, age appropriate sex ed nonsense.
Sexual indoctrination.
I mean,
Maya, real quick, tell people where to find you on social media.
So I'm at Maya for Us. So M-A-I-A number 4 U-S. That's, all of the socials are that handle. Our website, Maya for Us.
Know your risk.
Sometimes the listeners say it best.
Hey, Lars, love your show, and I really appreciate what you do. Boy, you cover more territory in an afternoon than a lonely dad doing springtime.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on what we like to call Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I don't have a great one today, except for the fact that Democrats seem to have forgotten that Kamala Harris was putting killers and violent criminals back on America's streets. Now, I know she's going to try to portray herself as Cop Kamala or Kamala the Cop because she's a former DA, a former attorney general, but not so much anymore. I don't think she believes in locking up violent criminals, and I'll give you some specific examples in just a moment. First, let's get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our X poll. You'll find the question every day at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Jason, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. I think J.D. Vance is really picking up some traction recently. He's got some ideas about migration. Cutting off funding to the illegal immigrants would cause them to self-deport. Essentially, they would decide to leave on their own if their funding was to be cut off. And
I've been suggesting it for a long time, Jason, but is now tell me this on Vance's position. I've been watching him as closely as Harris and President Trump. But is he suggesting the government benefits or is he suggesting cutting off the jobs?
Well, to each according to his ability, as far as Kamala Harris is concerned, and there's not going to be any jobs left if this flow of this humanitarian crisis, if we go to war,
Jason,
against the cartels,
Jason, what's the humanitarian? I don't know what you're talking about. Going to war with the cartels? How about this? How about we pay attention to our own affairs? And number one, should illegals come across the border? No. What's bringing them? Big paying jobs. I mean, gigantic paychecks compared to where they're coming from. Now, some of them are probably coming in as terrorists. Some are coming in as criminals. Some are coming in to traffic kids and women. But the big attraction for the vast majority of them is jobs. I ask you, is J.D. Vance's idea that we cut off the government benefits because they're getting that too? Or is he talking about a way to cut off the jobs? Because I've got a way that I think is absolutely easy, cheap, and fast. And I've suggested it for literally the better part of 20 years now.
That'd be insourcing or outsourcing of employment.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
Outsourcing of employment, like the Harley Davidson, where they only assemble pieces of.
No, but this isn't about that's a more general issue that could affect American workers as well as illegals. No, Jason, this idea was actually introduced by a member of Congress more than 15 years ago, so I can't claim credit for coming up with the idea. But here's how you do it. You tell American employers, starting, pick a date, January 1, July 1, whatever date you want. Starting that date, any employee you have in your payroll who is not a legal employee, has not been e-verified, you cannot deduct his wages at tax time. Now, I know that people who haven't run a business, I only run a small one, but I have three employees, and I think I pay them reasonably well. If I took in revenue but could not write off the cost of those salaries, do you know what happens, Jason? I have to pay the taxes on that money as though I received it, and I didn't. So if you told employers, either e-verify your workers and get rid of the ones that aren't legal, or you can't deduct the value of those wages. So I always illustrated, I say, if you had a landscaping company, Jason, and you employed, say, 10 illegal aliens, and let's say they each made, with salary and benefits and everything, $50,000 a year. That's probably about right for landscape. Because that's not all salary. Some of that's Social Security, pension, welfare, health insurance, the whole nine yards. Say it's 50, just to make the math easy. You're paying out $500,000 in wages every year. Do you know how much the IRS is going to want from you if you can't deduct those wages as part of your business expenses, which you can if they're legal workers? The IRS is going to want somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000 from you. But if you say, I've already paid the money to my workers, I don't have the money, they're going to say, then you're bankrupt. And every business in America would shed illegal aliens immediately. Now, how much does that cost to enforce? You announce the rule, every private company, you know, the boss gets a call from his HR director or his business manager, says, boss, they just made most of the wages we pay to workers undeductible. What do you want to do? The boss calls the man or woman in, says, okay, what's happening? IRS says we can't deduct the wages. We're employing a whole bunch of illegals. We can't deduct their wages. Your tax bill is going to go up by six or seven figures. And the boss says, well, what should I do? And his business manager says, fire every single illegal alien and hire an American replacement. And if the boss says, well, I might have to raise my wages to hire Americans to do this work, say, okay, is that a bad thing, Jason, if we had to raise wages to Americans while we're booting out millions of illegals? Now, when that illegal alien finds out, I just lost my job because I'm illegal, and every place I've applied says, I can't hire you unless you're a legal worker, and you're not, go on down the road, what will that person do? I think we already know, and I'll give you the example. 2008, the economy, you know, fell off a cliff. And the estimate was that about 2 million illegals self-deported. They left America. They said the jobs are gone for a while, and so we're going to leave. And they went back to Mexico or Guatemala or Honduras or wherever the heck they went. And they left because the jobs were gone. Now, there are conservatives who get themselves all wound around their own axle by saying, they're coming for the food stamps. You know what? They're not coming for the freaking food stamps. They're coming to make $30 an hour hanging sheetrock. They're coming to do construction jobs at 30 bucks an hour. That's what they're coming from or for. And if you say, well, why would they come up here? Well, the average worker in Guatemala, for example, makes $1,600 a year. Not a week, not a month, $1,600 a year. That's the average. Even if you're an above average worker, say you made $3,000 a year, and somebody said, hey, sneak across the border, you can immediately make 10 times as much money. And Jason, I further illustrated by saying, if you told, say, American truck drivers, how much you make as a really good long-haul truck driver, $100,000 a year, okay? If you sneak across the border into Canada, they'll pay you $1 million a year. As long as you can sneak in there. And
you really did your homework, Lars.
Well, I'm just saying it's easy to understand. And all these people who say Donald Trump is promising all this deportation, frankly, I disagree. And maybe the president has something else in mind, but he doesn't want to. You know, he's a smart businessman. Do you tell your competition what you're going to do? When he told America he was going to drop all income taxes on tips, what was the first thing his, if you can call her, competition did? Kamala Harris came out 2 months later, a little late to the game, and said, I'm for dropping income tax on tips. Yeah, I did my homework because, Jason, everybody says we can't get rid of, there's no way physically or financially to deport 12 million people. Yes, there is. Make them jobless. You say, well, they'll stay around for a while. Not if they're jobless. They will say, there are no jobs here for me. I cannot get a job. And they will go back across the border. Now, maybe there will be some hardcore exceptions, and you'll have to go out and actually arrest them and deport them. We're perfectly capable of that. But if you could solve 80%, 70% of the problem, get rid of the 10 million that Joe Biden let in, if we could get rid of 7 million of them by just changing the tax code and announcing the change, tell me that wouldn't be a good idea. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. New plan of action. Just mug all the Dems.
I got jumped like 5 weeks ago walking home in New York City. And when I woke up, I genuinely felt like a different person. Because I was on the floor, I was bleeding, I was concussed, and I was 100% Republican.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. You know, the Democrats are having their convention. And out in the streets around the convention are a bunch of America-hating, Palestinian and terrorism-supporting protesters. They've been burning flags, the American flag in particular. They've been hoisting the Palestinian flag, so-called, the flag of a state that has never actually existed, which is a joke in and of itself. And meantime, we have more than 100 hostages held by the Hamas terrorists. And I keep hearing about peace deals, ceasefire deals. Yep, they've negotiated between the United States, Egypt, and Qatar. The only players not involved in the deal are the folks who are actually at war. And that'd be Israel and the terrorist group known as Hamas. So I thought I'd put it to Rabbi Yaakov Menken, who's with the Coalition for Jewish Values, the largest rabbinic public policy organization in America. Rabbi, can you explain to me what in the world the Democrats are thinking right now? Or are they?
Well, it's very hard because, you know, the problem is you have these sort of anti-American, and they're rightly anti-American, not just
yes,
anti-Israel and not just anti-Semitic demonstrators. And the response of the Democrats is to coddle them, to, you know, say, oh, they're on that fringe. Chuck Schumer spoke about, you know, everything that the party needs to do with it. What he personally needs to do is allow the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act to come to the floor. But he's afraid to do that because it will show the divisions in the party and also alienate these anti-American, anti-civilization voters who will vote Democrat if only the Democrats don't say that they stand up for civilization and stand up for America.
Yep.
So he's really doing that. You know, it's a simple act. It just says, here's what anti-Semitism looks like, including in the modern era. It gives modern contemporary examples of anti-Semitism. As rabbis, we look to the Bible for the definition of anti-Semitism, but as a working definition, it's not bad with its contemporary examples. But, of course, Chuck Schumer won't let it on the floor.
See, I think
it'll be a problem for them.
Rabbi, not to disagree, but I think it's worse than you say. Because I don't know if you caught this the other night, because it was one simple, very short sentence. Not as short as Jesus wept, but short all the same. And it was Joe Biden. You know, they assigned him to the late night slot, the red eye slot, for his swan song speech before he flew off to California to, I guess, sulk and lick his wounds. But he's the guy who stood up there and gave this long speech, and it was kind of angry and all that. But among all the other things he said those protesters in the streets outside, they have a point. And I thought, I would expect people to explode. The president of the United States says a group of people who are demonstrably anti-American, as you said, I agree with you on that, and pro-terrorism, that the president of the United States isn't coddling them. He actually endorsed their point of view by saying they have a point. Now, I'm not sure what the point is. It's okay to take toddlers as hostages. It's okay to rape women when you take them hostage. It's okay to slaughter people for no reason other than your crazy jihadism. But Joe Biden thinks they have a point. Shouldn't Americans be a little concerned about that?
Yeah, it's actually even worse than you described it. Because
okay, right.
I did not miss that quote. And it's not just that he said they have a point. He said too many innocents have been killed on both sides. He set up an entirely false dichotomy. Israelis on one side, Arab Palestinians on the other. No, that's not what's going on at all. The two sides are the side that wants to save as many lives as possible and the side that wants to kill as many people as possible. Hamas, of course, their existence is genocide. They want to finish Hitler's final solution. And that, by the way, is a lot of what the protesters are protesting in favor of. They want Hitler's job to be finished, for him to have a posthumous victory. But the other thing about Hamas is that they want as many Arabs to die as a PR tool to use in America and blame on Israel. So Biden went right into that narrative. It's as if, oh, Hamas killed too many people and Israel killed too many people. That's not actually what's going on at all. If Hamas would surrender and give up the hostages, of course, nobody would be dying on either side. But even more to the point, Hamas deliberately built their command centers and their training and everything they could underground, under civilian buildings, inside mosques, in schoolyards, so that they commit as many war crimes as possible, and then they get the media to blame Israel for the Hamas war crimes. That's what's really going on. So when Joe Biden said they have a point, too many people are dying on both sides, he set it up as if Israel's also responsible for killing innocents. It's not what's actually going on. It's all being done and engineered by Hamas, and these people are the cheerleading section for the modern-day Nazis.
I mean, these are the people, I guess, if after the bombing of Dresden, whether you thought that was right or wrong, I thought it was right that the good guys won and the bad guys lost. But you say, well, a lot of children and a lot of women and a lot of innocents, a lot of old people died at Dresden. Yes, they did. You start a war, and when you get the response to starting a war, you should expect that there's going to be consequences. And in every, I don't think there's a war in history in which innocents have not ended up dying. But then why not talk to the people who started it and could end it, as you point out? And now, just in the last couple of hours, I wanted to ask you about this, Rabbi. So you had this deal that was cooked up by Qatar and Egypt and the United States, and not directly involving Israel and Hamas, although I think what they plan to do is say, we're going to bring this package to Israel and Hamas. And Hamas immediately said no. They said no on Sunday. And now we're told that Joe Biden is playing the Neville Chamberlain role, asking Israel, this just came in the last couple of hours, to make further concessions. So you got to give more. So he's giving Hamas exactly what they want. They haven't given anything. And the president of the United States is saying, how much more do we need to give you to get you to come, you know, to agree to this deal? And they're just sitting back laughing under, you know, under their beards, saying, ah, look at this. We haven't done jack for these people. And they're asking Israel, make some more concessions, give them some more of what they want.
It's you're describing it exactly correctly. The more intransigent Hamas is, the more Biden turns to the Israelis and say, can't you just give in a little more? I mean, right now, what's going on, Hamas is so animalistic that 300-plus days in, they are still holding 100 people hostage from, like, 26 different countries, including 8 American citizens. These are not kind, decent human beings. They're literally negotiating for the lives of hostages whom they kidnap, civilians whom they kidnap from their homes. We're not talking about fighters. We're not talking about military POWs. We're talking about innocent people, the women of whom have been raped countless times by now. And they're holding them. And the response of the United States is, when Hamas says, no, we won't do the deal, to turn to Israel and say, can't you sweeten it more? Can't you do it better? At what point do decent human beings stand up and say, oh, no, there's no more deals. Hamas, you either take this or we're just going to kill you all.
That's not a bad approach at all. That is Rabbi Yaakov Menken. Rabbi, thank you very much. Rabbi Yaakov is the with the Coalition for Jewish Values. We appreciate you coming on, sir. Back in a moment, I'll get to your calls. 866, hey Lars. Send emails to talk@larslarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Hey, it's Jamie.
Did you know Lars has a face for radio?
He's hideous!
Wanna see? Follow him on Instagram at The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. We're glad to take your calls. I got to tell you what Jay Inslee is doing to drive the trucking companies out of business in the state of Washington. But first, if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, happens here every single day at 866-HEY-LARS. If you're a naysayer, we're going to put you first in line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. Our X poll today. This is going to sound strange, but should transit buses and trains get priority over you and me in traffic the same way police and fire do? I actually agree with the systems that give some priority to police or fire trucks that are responding to an emergency. But this release came today, and this happens to be TriMet. I wonder whether Seattle's Metro Transit Agency is doing the same. They say they are spending more and more money, and they have fewer and fewer riders per capita. Riders on TriMet bus lines are getting back a little extra time in their day. TriMet and the Portland Bureau of Transportation, that's City Hall, have teamed up to bring transit signal priority to three intersections, They name off the intersections. They've added bus lanes. And what they say is, when the bus shows up at the red light, it'll turn green for the bus. For you and me, not so very much. So what they're saying is, if you ride the bus, you get to travel fast. If not, if you're just somebody who, say, works a job, pays your taxes, you become a second-class citizen to the people who ride on transit. This is the way they're trying to force you out of your car. You'd think they'd have known better by now, because transit ridership in the Northwest, both Seattle and Portland in particular, other cities to a lesser degree, have seen declining per capita transit ridership. That's the only way to measure it. I mean, Seattle's bigger than it was 20 years ago, so is Portland. But is transit ridership up when measured against population increase? And the answer is no, it's down. And it's down despite the fact that both Seattle and Portland have literally spent billions of dollars in the last 20 years to build light rail trains, to buy better buses, to do all these things that ostensibly improve the system. And even with all those billions of dollars of improvements, almost all of them paid for by taxpayers, whether it's gasoline taxes, a good chunk of your federal gas taxes get diverted to transit. There's local taxes that are laid on in both Seattle and Portland. And of course, there's money from Salem and Olympia. So you're paying for a failing system. And the failing system is now literally saying, if you're on a bus, you get to go through the light. If you're in a regular car, you get to sit and wait in traffic. So should transit buses and trains get priority over other traffic the way police and fire do? My answer is no, absolutely not. Today's X-Poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Yesterday's X-Poll, should all government employees be banned from lobbying the Congress or bureaucrats? That's not the idea of Kamala Harris. She would never do that. Donald Trump, President Trump, has proposed that all government employees, and I want that to include the bureaucrats, the average workers working for the state and federal governments, and of course, members of Congress and the president, should be banned from lobbying. How do you think that sellout rhino Republican Paul Ryan is making so much money now? He's sitting on a board of directors at Fox News. And I don't know whether he has any other lobbying activities, but fact is, former members of Congress make major bucks by going back and lobbying the very government where they worked. It is an advantage that other citizens do not have. I would not have a problem with a law that simply says, you want to run for Congress? Great. Serve your country? Great. When you're done, and you don't get to use your specialized contacts and knowledge to lobby against the interests, in many cases, of the citizens you once served. You don't have that option. By the way, I've got to tell you about this. You can get a stack of cash. This is going to sound like a commercial. It's not. You can get a stack of cash to buy a home in the state of Oregon as long as you are, listen carefully, as long as you are not a citizen. I know you're going to say, I think I heard that wrong, Lars. No, you can't get the extra funding help if you are a citizen. You can get it if you're a non-citizen. Hacienda Community Development Corp is participating in a taxpayer-funded down payment assistance program that gives money, doesn't loan it to them, gives money to non-citizens to buy homes in Oregon. It excludes American citizens from eligibility. Hacienda is offering $30,000 for down payment assistance. Now, I'm willing to bet there are people listening to this show right now who have been for the last several years beavering away, trying to put away thousands of dollars so they have enough money to make a down payment on their first home. And you know what you're doing? You're putting away that money from your wages. You pay taxes on your wages. You're a citizen of this country. And while you're working your tail off, and you have to have the discipline to sock away $30,000, $50,000, $70,000 to put a down payment on a house, the government just took some of your tax money and is saying to non-citizens, guess what? You can get some help buying that house. We're going to give you $30,000, and citizens need not apply. Citizens are not eligible. Consider this. The eligibility requirements include being a non-citizen. Now, Oregon State Rep. Ed Deal, you've heard him on the show, told the Daily Caller he got confirmation from Business Oregon that Hacienda CDC is using those funds for non-citizens while excluding Americans from the process. That is an absolute outrage. That needs to stop. Glad to have you with me. Always glad to take your phone calls and your emails. This segment brought to you by NickShivers.com. To sell your home instantly, go to NickShivers.com for details.
The Lars Larson.
You ready for the big show?
All right.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails, and I'll do that in just a moment. There is so much going on today, but I want to talk to our friend Dr. Raul Garcia, who's running for the United States Senate. How are you, Doc?
I'm doing well, Lars. Thank you for having me back.
And this run for Senate, this may be one of the best opportunities conservatives and Republicans have ever had to put a U.S. senator in that actually represents Washington, unlike the two jokers that are in there now.
Well, I think that that's the reason that I'm here. I want everybody in Washington to wake up and feel that there's actually someone 3,000 miles away that cares about their family.
So what I want to know, where, first of all, tell people where they can find your social media. Sometimes I shortchange that, but I want people to know what all your positions are on all the issues, not just the few we talk about on the radio.
Yes, of course. Well, you know, my social media is garcia4wa.com, garcia4wa.com. And just a short summary, I'm that 11-year-old boy from Cuba that lived under a socialist system, then probably here more than anything to not let it happen here in our country. And we are, I feel, not walking, but running towards that system. Had the opportunity to come to this country and live out the American dream, become a physician, become a medical leader in my profession, national leader, and had the opportunity to work for Bob Dole, who really seeded in me this love that one day I would be in public service, I'd be able to pay back this country for everything it's done for me. But that American dream, I think that as Reagan talked about that shiny city on the hill, I think that that light is flickering. We are accepting a lot of things that are infringing upon our lives and the lives of our families, and that is not okay. It is one thing to be accepting of people, but not accepting of those things that are infringing upon us. And the crime in our state, the open drug use in our streets, the unbelievable upside-down world that we live in today where people can't afford a house, people can't afford groceries, people can't afford to put gas in their car. All these things are of monumental importance in bringing about a government of solutions. Of course, high up on our platform is fentanyl because I see it every day in my ER, 2 to 5 overdoses a day every time that I work. And I did walk 185 miles to prove a point that we can do things together. And what I'm asking now, everybody in Washington, is to together, let's change our government. Let's change our government to actually bring about solutions, because the things that we're doing right now are not helping our streets and are not helping our future. And we're actually putting our money on our children's and grandchildren's credit card, and that is not okay.
Well, let's talk about OBGYN, which might not strike people as a U.S. Senate kind of issue, but it is, because you pointed out that finally, at long last, after you raised the issue, that there are places, counties in eastern Washington, places like Yakima, that have been losing OBGYNs at an alarming rate. And I know that when OBGYNs, you know, give up their practice in Idaho, they blame it on the ban on abortion. Well, Jay Inslee and Maria Cantwell can't blame it on that in Washington State. Washington State will do any abortion under any circumstances, and you're still losing OBGYNs. And what is Cantwell's response?
Well, this is very hypocritical because our senator comes out as a champion of women. And she doesn't talk about the fact that five OBGYN hospitals have closed in Washington State under her watch. I have been to Olympia. I have been fighting for small rural hospitals to stay actually open and have been successful at it. I was able to get some help to Toppenish Hospital, which is the only hospital in native land here in central Washington. I'm very proud of that. And this is a fight that we need to continue. The government that we have now in place is skating through. And they believe that gaslighting, by telling you something, you're going to believe it. And I, as a scientist, want to bring that scientific mind into government. Let's look at what we have had. Let's look at the last few years. Let's look at the fact that she is not a woman's champion or a champion of women's health care, because we have OBGYN services that are much needed by the women of the state that have closed, and we are fighting to bring it back to open up again. And that could be done by the federal government. As a senator, I could bring out a bill to open up the critical access designation of hospitals again in Washington State, which will give a better reimbursement to a service that is truly very expensive for small hospitals to be able to support. And this is why they have closed. But the government that we have right now have closed their eyes to it, have ignored it, and hence we have the problem where if you have a pregnant woman in Packwood, she has to drive all the way to Centralia to deliver because there's nothing in between.
Tell me this, though, Dr. Garcia. Why are we having a problem with this? In other words, if they charge the mother and father a lot of money to deliver that baby, how is it we're losing OBGYNs? Why are they leaving these places? If the hospital's collecting a lot of money, you'd think they'd have the money to compensate the doctors well enough that they'd stick around. So what's the reason they're leaving? Do we know?
So small hospitals, unfortunately, in this state, get as low as 20% of their billing paid.
20%? So because of non-pay patients?
Right. So the hospital could bill for a dollar. The reimbursement to some of these rural hospitals by insurance companies and the government of our state is 20 cents on the dollar. So you understand now an OBGYN service that needs to hire an OBGYN, an anesthesiologist, a pediatrician, two nurses, and two techs per birth.
Yep.
Per day, 24/7. It is a system where if you don't have enough births in that small hospital, you really can't sustain that service. And this is why the federal government has stepped in and said, look, this is why we have critical access designations, which actually pay hospitals back at 105% what they bill. At that level, you could afford any service, and you could really give the community any service that it needs.
I think
but
that's
they
a
have
great,
not.
That, that's a
they
great
have
solution.
Not opened up. Yeah.
And by the way, Dr. Garcia, when Cantwell says I'm a champion of women's rights, can I translate that? And you tell me if you think I'm out to lunch. She's saying she backs abortion in a state where abortion on demand is available anywhere, anytime, for any reason, and they will try to get it paid for by the taxpayers, which it shouldn't be. But that's all she's really saying, is she's a big champion of abortion.
That is the only thing she's saying, and is, again, gaslighting. This is not an issue in Washington State. We have what we have. We have the laws in place that make abortion available. Women should not fear anything else with that topic. And to come out and just accentuate that is just like saying, well, I drink water. Okay, well, we all do.
That's right. And by the way, when Cantwell says, I'll help you abort any baby, but I won't help the OBGYNs stay in their communities, you tell me what that means. Is your work...
Biden doesn't understand the connection between America's tanking economy and his own tax policies. Luckily, Senator John Kennedy set him straight.
If you believe that tax policy has nothing to do with the economy, then you're pretty much like a rock, only dumber.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails, but there's something I've been aching to sound off about. In fact, we've talked about it a bit before, because Joe Biden, even though he's been kicked to the curb and he's effectively the interim president of the United States, and Kamala Harris, they want billions, probably tens of billions of dollars for a Ukraine war. And what do they want it for? They say why we have to defend democracy. Well, does that include banning religion and churches? And I'm going to explain what I mean in just a moment. First, welcome to the program. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I'd love to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, I'm going to put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you care to, cast a vote in our X poll. We put up a brand new question out of the news of the day every day at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it at LarsLarson.com, my website. Now, what do I mean by banning religion and churches? Well, our friend Wesley Smith, who writes about mostly life issues, but he wrote a piece on something we've brought up on the show before, and that is Ukraine, according to Joe Biden, is an exemplar of democracy, and that we have to protect this free society in Ukraine against the predations of Vladimir Putin. Look, I'm not really a fan of Zelensky, not really a fan of Putin either, but consider what's going on now. Ukraine is going to ban the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. You say, hold on, we're supporting a democracy where they literally ban a church in particular, and why are they talking about banning it? Well, the explanation they give is, well, the Ukrainian Orthodox Church has ties to the Russian Orthodox Church. Actually, that kind of makes sense because an awful lot of the people in Ukraine already identify as being culturally Russian, and they go to the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. The brand new law, which is waiting for the signature of Zelensky, the president of the country, outlaws any religious organization that is centered in Russia, known as an aggressor country in the Ukrainian legislation. Now imagine if you said, well, we don't want to have any churches in America that have ties to foreign countries like, say, Italy, like Rome, because, you know, the Catholic Church has these ties to this big, wealthy organization that in many cases does not support things that make any sense. No, you're not going to do that. You let people practice their religion. So when Joe Biden tells you, we've got to do this because we have to support the freedom-loving country of Ukraine, and then Ukraine has a president that says, I might just sign this law that outlaws one church in particular. According to the law, the parish and monastery communities of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church will have 9 months to sever ties with the Russian church. Well, there's just one little problem with that. The problem is they've already done it. They did that 9 months ago. There is no need for the law. The local council of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church voted to separate itself from the Moscow Partitionate, I think is the way you say it, already in May of 2022. Now, the church had updated its rules, its statutes, and they said, but the state of Ukraine is still labeling the Ukrainian Orthodox Church as a Russian church, and as such, they may declare it illegal. And as Wesley Smith notes, he says, it's worth noting there's a competing church to the UOC, the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. It is the Orthodox Church of Ukraine, which has already been recognized as Ukraine's national church by the Ecumenical Patriarch in Constantinople, the first among equals among all Orthodox bishops, not yet a pope, and the OCU is deemed by Zelensky to be loyal. So now we've got a freedom-loving country where there's an official church for the country. America doesn't have that and should not under the First Amendment. We also have a country in which if the church will declare its loyalty to the government, I mean, that very idea should be absolutely foreign and repellent to Americans. The founders of this country thought you should be able to practice whatever faith you want. And in fact, famously, some of the people who left England by way of Holland way back when, the Pilgrims, said, we're leaving because we want religious freedom. And that little vein ran all the way through the Constitution. It ran through the minds of the people who wrote the Constitution. They said, we do not want an official church of the country. We don't want churches to have to declare their loyalty to the country. And the dispute about whether or not the Ukrainian Orthodox Church legitimately represents most of Ukrainian Orthodoxy is a matter for the church to work out, as he writes. Indeed, the church itself remains canonical, is the term, within most international Orthodoxy, as are the Russian, Greek, Serbian, Romanian, and Antiochian churches. It's all one church, even if the relations among different regions become Byzantine. But the government of Ukraine should not determine which church is legitimate and which one is not, which can operate, and which one should be suppressed. This is absolute insanity. You would think that that one element would tell people what's really going on here. The Biden crime family has deep and financial ties to Ukraine. The Democrat Party has some deep and disturbing ties to the country of Ukraine. Ukraine has been used as a money laundry by the American Democrat Party. And the fact that a president is now demanding that the American public fund a war, which appears to have no end, and appears to be a war in which the United States has played a role in provoking the war. And I'll stick to that position. We ran secret CIA operations, that was news about a year and a half ago, in Ukraine on the Russian border. And I've asked you before, if Russia or if, say, China set up a bunch of secret CIA or the Chinese equivalent operating stations on the border of the United States, we would take that as a provocative move. Did Russia do that? We ran secret laboratories in Ukraine. And you say, Lars, your tinfoil hat's too tight. Now, let me tell you something. Victoria Nuland sat right there in front of the United States Congress and was asked by Dr. Rand Paul, member of the U.S. Senate, was asked, should we worry about these labs that are being run in Ukraine? Now, the public story was, oh, they're just there for public health concerns. You know, they're, treating people for the clap or something, you know, taking care of influenza and that sort of thing. Now, what did Victoria Nuland tell Senator Rand Paul? And remember, she was working for the State Department. She's been there forever. She said, we cannot let those clinics fall into the hands of the Russians. Now, if all those clinics were doing was, say, public health, worried about vaccinations, inoculations, the jab, influenza, sexually transmitted diseases, do you really think that Victoria Nuland of the U.S. State Department would be that concerned about having a public health clinic fall into the hands of the Russians? Why, they might figure out how we're making sure to avoid communicable diseases. No, they might be something a little bit more than that, and we had 47 of them operating in Ukraine. Do you think that Russia might have had a reason to be concerned about a Ukraine that is oriented toward the United States of America and against the interests of the Russians? And now Ukraine wants to talk about banning churches. If that makes any sense to you, I'd be glad to take the naysayer call. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Sometimes the truth is awkward.
You know what the Muslims call the Jews in the Quran? The children of Israel. Well, this is awkward.
Now, more truth from Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you and always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. It is amazing to me that the Democrat Party is still trying to sell Bidenomics. I told you that last week when Kamala Harris came out and announced that she was going to have price controls, I mean, hearkening back to Nixon and the Nixon administration about 50 years ago, I thought they're really going to try to sell this nonsense. Well, apparently they are. And one of the speakers tonight, on the night when Kamala Harris actually accepts the nomination that she's effectively already had for about a month, Senator Bob Casey is going to talk about that. And I thought we'd get get Kurt Couchman to talk about whether or not they're still trying to sell Bidenomics, shrinkflation, and greedflation. Kurt, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Hey, Lars. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Kurt Couchman is a senior fellow in fiscal policy at Americans for Prosperity. Is this stuff going to actually resonate with the American public saying, yeah, the reason that costs are going up is not because the Congress has allocated trillions of dollars and flushed it into an American economy, so you have more dollars and fewer goods or more dollars and the same amount of goods. That's not the reason. It's all just greedy corporate chiefs sitting in corner offices, you know, polishing their mustache or whatever it is they do up there.
Well, they're certainly going to try to make that case. I mean, they know that if the American people connect the dots between their votes and the inflation and the interest rates and a lot of the economic turmoil we've seen the last couple of years, then they've got big political problems. But as long as they can confuse enough people and make people believe that businesses who are really just riding the same economic forces as the rest of us have the primary responsibility for this, then maybe enough of them will, you know, escape the voters' wrath and make their way back to the Senate so they can serve another 6 years.
I mean, because Kamala Harris, correct me if I'm wrong, she doesn't talk to much of anybody about anything. She doesn't do interviews these days. She doesn't hold press conferences. Even if reporters from the mainstream legacy media were inclined to ask her a tough question, they don't get the opportunities. So, but is she ever going to explain what it is she does propose? Because am I right to assume that should, in the unlikely event that Kamala Harris actually gets in as president of the United States, she's going to do more of what Joe has been doing, which is massive spending, printing of money, and inflation will keep going up while she tells us all that it's the fault of greedy corporations?
Well, she's certainly being quiet while she attempts a rebrand. You know, when she was in the Senate, she was considered to be the most progressive senator in the body, even more than Bernie Sanders. They're trying to move her to the center. They're trying to move ultra-progressive Governor Tim Walz to the center as well. But they both have a record. I mean, Walz as a governor and a member of Congress before that, although it was a Republican-leaning district, so he had to play it. Senator Harris, you know, she spent 4 years in that body. So she has a very progressive record. You can look at the bill she's introduced. And she, you know, very much earned that title as the most progressive senator.
Then how does she plan to address inflation? Or is it just going to be 4 years of her blaming somebody else, which will harken back, I guess, to the first 4 years of Obama? I couldn't believe him the other night when he was talking about, oh, we all have to work together on this and the name calling is wrong. I listened to that joker for 4 years say everything that went wrong during his administration was George W. Bush's fault. And I thought,
that's right.
Well, maybe 6 months in you can do that. Oh, maybe even a year. But 3.5, 4 years in and you're still blaming it's the last guy's fault, not mine, is kind of pathetic.
Yeah, and I mean, let's hope that Kamala Harris isn't the next president. But if she were, yeah, if she goes ahead and does this, the price control stuff, I mean, the anti-gouging legislation would inevitably lead to price controls. That would create black markets, and with black markets comes crime, because you can't use the legal system to adjudicate disputes. You have to do it in the street with guns. That's the only way. And so the anti-gouging, price gouging legislation that she's trying to put forward would undermine law and order in this country. And for what? To bring shortages to the American people? I mean, prices play an important role in the economy. They send signals to producers, hey, make more stuff, move it over here, and to consumers, hey, if you don't really need that, then don't buy it and leave it for someone who really needs it. But when you short-circuit that process and you get shortages, then all kinds of bad things follow from that.
I guess I just think, you know, and I know there are people who say, well, there's gouging all the time, you know, like after a hurricane. And I thought after Katrina, when the local Home Depot has run out of plywood, you know, because ordinarily they sell 100 sheets a week of half inch, you know, plywood. And all of a sudden you have a hurricane and you have demand for 1,000. Well, the store could say, yep, we could send a special truck from New Orleans all the way up to wherever the heck you could pick up, you know, thousands of sheets of plywood and bring them back. But that's going to cost a lot of money. And if we add that to the price, we'll be accused of gouging. So we're just going to tell everybody it's on order. Come back in a week. And that doesn't serve anybody's needs.
When you look at the actually what happens during disasters and hurricanes, you see that most businesses are not raising their prices significantly. They're actually more comfortable with shortages than raising the prices, because people, you know, feel like there's something not right about that. But in so doing, they make it harder to resupply themselves. So, you know, there's actually a lot of great writing on this that the Mercatus Center at George Mason University has done through their Hayek Studies program, looking at disaster immediate relief and response, and then also the recovery and rehabilitation rebuilding process. And it's fascinating when you look at what actually happens rather than what lefties claim will happen.
And by the way, even in the non-emergency times, I mean, we used to be a country where I think a lot of us got accustomed to, you'd walk in and say, I need a box of screws. And they'd just say, what size? And we got it all right here. And all of a sudden it's, I'm sorry, that's going to have to be ordered. You'll have to come back in a couple of weeks. And that's not in emergency times. That's non-emergency times. And you say, well, why don't you stock more stuff? Well, you don't want us to recover the cost of doing that. So we're not just, I mean, the store clerk isn't going to tell you that, but I know why they're not doing it. They're not doing it for the most rational of reasons. Why am I, if you're going to gripe about the fact that Walmart makes a 3% margin, and Kamala Harris is going to say, we're going to go out and we're going to go after those greedy corporations that are making 3%. I think she wants a Marxist society where corporations make 0% and the government runs everything. And then going to Home Depot will be like going to the DMV, which I don't want it to be.
Except there'll be empty shelves. the reality, though, is that corporate profits are usually about 10% of our gross domestic product, and that funds people's pensions and life insurance and that kind of thing. And they bumped up just a tiny bit during the pandemic. They were about 10% all the way through the 20-teens, bumped up a little bit when the government was just dumping money into the economy. And guess what they are today? They're about 10%. Actually, a little bit below that.
Well, and you know what, Kurt? It floors me. People will call and say, well, yeah, that's phony. They make billions. I said, well, if you sell enough stuff at a 3% margin, it does add up to billions eventually. And they'll say, I don't believe those numbers. They're phony. They're lying. And I say, well, they're audited financials that they're required to release if they're a publicly held company. What should I believe? Right. And they say, well, I just don't believe it. Kind of like Gina Raimondo when she was asked the other day, what about these adjusted job numbers? Well, I just don't believe, I'm not familiar with that. And you're like, you're the Commerce Secretary and you're not familiar with Bureau of Labor Statistics? You are an incredible loser.
Yeah, you know, Lars, I'm all about measuring things the way they should be. Return on investment, return on equity, those are really important concepts for business. But one thing that I want to know as a budget policy guy is, what is the return on spending, I won't call it investment, from government? Are we getting a good deal from our federal government?
You know the answer to that one, Kurt. It's a giant toilet. You just push flush.
Yeah, I mean, even the things that we really, really need, we're spending more than we need to on. Like nuclear weapons, super duper important. Do we need as many as we have for our security? Probably not. So, like, but where are the mechanisms for Congress to go through and say, hey, this is worth doing, this isn't worth doing?
I think they just trust the deep state bureaucracy. That's Kurt Couchman, senior fellow at Americans for Prosperity. Back in a moment, I'll get to your calls. 866, hey, Lars, you've got the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome to Honestly Provocative Talk. But fair warning, if you're listening to this show, you're likely on the FBI's most wanted list. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I never thought I'd get anybody to be a naysayer on our X poll today, but let me get to that in a moment. This segment of the show is brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. Now, our X poll today. And here's why I'm asking it. I've had people say, well, Lars, these traffic interrupters, this is what they are. They're the ability to have police and fire rigs that have a way to signal a red light so that it turns green. So if you're driving the fire truck, if you're driving in a police car and you're coming up on an intersection, you can get the traffic signals to turn from red to green, but not in a way that causes crashes. So TriMed comes out today. And they send out this message. I'll bet Metro in Seattle's doing the same. And they say, look, The TriMet buses are getting a little extra time. They will be given transit signal priority. And what that means is when the bus comes up, the light turns green. When you come up, the taxpaying citizen, the light does not turn green. And I thought, okay, hold on a second. I understand fire and police rigs should get that kind of priority. Get to the emergency now. But to say we're going to punish people who are driving an automobile, which is the choice of more than 95% of all commuters in the Pacific Northwest. And you say, well, what about New York City? This ain't New York City. It's not Chicago either. But even in those towns, about 40% of the commuting public rides on transit, and the rest of the people ride the rest the way the rest of us do, which is private automobiles. And what's happening in particular in the Pacific Northwest is that even though the transit agencies of the Northwest have literally spent tens of billions of dollars, heck, Sound Transit by itself in Seattle has plans to spend about $60 billion on light rail that's going to carry a very small number of people. And they spend billions more on buses, and now they're going to spend billions more on top of that to make sure they're electric buses, and they want priority over you. You are the person driving the car. You're going to work. You're going to the grocery store. You're going to buy things. You're going to school. Whatever it is you're doing, they want priority over you. You can sit at a red light and wait while the bus goes through. And why are they doing this? They're doing this because they're trying to make transit more attractive. And they say, look at this. This is from a press release from a government agency. Allowing buses to move around congestion and arrive on time more often, even during peak commute times, transit signal priority is going to work to reduce the amount of time that buses spend sitting at red lights. And I had a bunch of emails from people who said, yeah, when I see a bus with four people on it and there are 20 people in automobiles, the bus gets the priority. The people in the automobiles get to wait. Well, Jeff writes in, and this doesn't surprise me. I think he's from Blue Jean, Eugene, the People's Republic of Eugene. He said, yes, mass transit should always be granted the right of way. And I thought at first he was being sarcastic. He said a bus or a train transporting 10 to 50 taxpaying passengers effectively eliminates 10 to 50 vehicles on the roadways. Pretty simple, right? Well, there's a problem with that, Jeffro. This is the kind of naysayer I'd love to talk to. He said Eugene and Springfield do this well under Lane Transit District, especially the EMX, the Emerald Express buses. These are the so-called high-speed buses. And I still remember a few years ago when they put them into effect, and I got the spokesman for LTD on, and I said, you're calling these high-speed buses. What is their average speed? And I knew what it was. And he said, 18 miles an hour. I said, if the high-speed bus is 18 miles an hour, how fast is the low-speed bus? He didn't have an answer to that. Special bus lanes and stops combined with bus-only lanes and signals expedite all traffic. Transit buses and trains run on a designated time and stop schedule. Police, fire, and emergency are not on a call on a route. The comparison does not apply. Let me tell you the first problem. The average bus is not running around with 50 taxpaying passengers on it. If you take a look at the entire route for most city buses in the Northwest, on average, you know, and this is even when you include peak rush hour, but you have to include all the other hours of the day that that bus is running around, they're carrying four or five passengers. And if you take a look at the amount of fuel they burn, the amount of pollution they produce, the average automobile beats them on the number of people it carries, on the pollution it does not produce. So 50 may be true during some short times during rush hour, but the average bus ain't carrying 50 people. That's problem number one. And he says, well, we have to have these special things because they're on a schedule. I want to suggest something to you. The rest of us are always on a schedule. I'll bet almost everybody listening to this has deadlines, has places they need to be, and we aren't all just gallivanting around in our cars. You've got to get to work. You've got to get home. You've got to get to the daycare. You have things you need to get done, and transit is saying, well, you can wait while our empty bus goes by. Let's go to Charles. Hey, Charles, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Thank you. Thank you, Lars. I will try to make this quick. I was thinking about these electric car ideas, and they're completely stupid.
Yep.
Number one, every gas station has anywhere from, what, 4 to 8 pumps.
Yep.
So we would have to have how many gas stations in the United States, we would figuring how many pumps, we would have to have 100 and some odd million or more charging stations.
We would, because the other number you should throw in there, Charles, the average time top to bottom to refuel a liquid-fueled vehicle is 7 minutes, sometimes shorter, sometimes longer, average is 7. The average time to fully recharge an electric car, even at a fast charge, is a whole lot longer. The Lars